We are live. Lucky. Oh,
holy moly.
Goodness. Holy moly.
Right on time.
Thank you guys for coming in. It is 7:19. We are normally here at 7 o'clock on the dot, but had some streaming traffic issues on StreamYard here. But we're happy to be here, aren't we, Riley?
Thrilled.
You know, the last time, when was the last time we were live together? It was 3 weeks ago. Russell Wilson was a Seahawk, you know. It was that long ago. Tom Brady was retired.
Look at that. We're so funny.
It was unbelievable. But we got a great show lined up today. Special shout out to Nate from IDP guys for this amazing outlay background. We're looking real here. It's next step forward, upwards and onwards type of thing. We got a great show lined up today. We're going to break down our top five wide receivers. If you're wondering about number 10 through 6, as well as our free agency reactions, we talked about that last week on the show. You can find that on both For Frequency Sake's YouTube at For Frequency Sake or IDP Guys at IDP Guys on YouTube. Both are available. Both are fantastic, especially if you want to see our lovely faces. Last week, while we were home, different setting, well worth a check in there. But before we get into the top five receivers of this class, according to our rankings, we also had a big trade today. Tyreek Hill was traded away from the Kansas City Chiefs to the Miami Dolphins. The deal included a first-round pick, a second-round pick, a fourth-round pick, a fifth-round pick, and more picks to come, probably. Who knows? But that was a boatload that Miami gave up to get one of the best receivers in football. And obviously, that's going to have sweeping fantasy ramifications. What were your immediate reactions to that, Riley?
The main thing that I've thought about that I want to take away from this, and I don't want to go on about it too long because I know we kind of disagree about it, but I don't want to temper Jalen Waddle in any way, shape, or form. I'm not saying that this is a good thing for him and that this increases his ceiling. It is a cap on his ceiling, but I still think his ceiling is great. I think the reason he was limited in a in a scheme basis was because of him being the number one guy. And I think he's shown plenty with his big play ability. He's had plenty of big plays in the NFL and as well as college that he can do anything he's asked. And it just so happened he was asked to play in the screen game because that's what the offense needed with a bottom five offensive line and no other weapons. So I think that I don't want to get too lost in Tyreek Hill being the one on this team, even though he is now the one. Jalen Waddle is one of the best wide receiver twos in football now.
I'm muted. That's fantastic. But
I was going to say, like,
I'm so excited about talking about the Miami Dolphins, I guess, that I go silent. But all that really matters here is that Jalen Waddle is the same player that he was 2 weeks ago. We were so excited about Jalen Waddle. And yes, Tyreek Hill is going to come in and he's going to demand the rock because he's just that type of player. He's going to be great. Tyreek Hill is a very good player and he will take targets from Jalen Waddle. I agree with you that this is not a death knell for Jalen Waddle in the slightest. In fact, it's going to make the offense better, more touchdown upside for an offense that wasn't scoring a lot. It's going to open up, secondary coverage for Jalen Waddle.
This is a
much better team all around. After the free agency spending, they also signed Teron Armstead for a 5-year deal yesterday. They obviously signed Chase Edmonds. They brought in Raheem Mostert. They brought in some other offensive linemen. The Dolphins have had a fantastic offseason with a real shot at winning this division over the Bills. I would not bet on that, but that is in the realm of outcomes. That is in the realm of outcomes.
It is in
of a superstar breakout from Tua. That's possible. Now, what will happen is Jalen Waddle is going to see less volume than what he saw last year. That hurts. You know, you always want more volume. The efficiency will go up which will offset it. But I think both of us, we agreed before. Where would you put his ceiling? Because I think we talked about it, and I stick to it.
We agreed that his ceiling was about wide receiver 10. That's kind of best case scenario for him in the sense that he will have the big play ability. We've had that from two guys in the same offense. That's not a problem. The only thing that's going to cap his upside here is obviously Tyreek Hill taking a chunk of the touchdowns and, you know, a lot of the yards between the 20s. But also, you know, Tua's ability to lead a big play offense, which I think he can. There are plenty of people out there who think he can't, and that is to be seen this season. But I think Jalen Will is absolutely talented enough to hit that mark.
Now, there's obviously a lot of other fancy ramifications. Tua Tagovailoa is now – I don't think I said that. I think I left out the L. I think I lost the L. I think I lost the L in my attempt. But what really matters is that Tua probably won't be losing any L's anytime soon. I don't know what that really means. I don't even know if that was a compliment or not. But this is obviously a big boost for Tua, getting one of the best, you know, receivers in the league, in addition to all the offseason additions the Dolphins have had. People are still somewhat low. I saw Matt Berry saying that you still view Tua as a high-end QB2. I'm putting Tua in the QB1 range. I think he's going to be in that 10 to 12 range. I think we're going to see him on the move more than we saw last year and the year before. I think we're going to see him on bootlegs. I think we're going to see some really creative ways of this offense with Mike McDaniels, where Tua is going to feel – Tua's the star here. And I understand that they signed Teddy Bridgewater, and Teddy Bridgewater – was a little bit murky in his announcement when he was signed. He was asked what his role was. And what did he say, Riley?
He said exactly what a backup quarterback would say.
Exactly. He's not gonna come in and say, like, unless you are coming in to back up Aaron Rodgers, to back up Tom Brady, you're not gonna say, yeah, I'm here. I don't really expect to play.
Especially as a guy who's walked into starting roles his entire career just because he's the best quarterback in the room because they have no one else. Not to slander, I have no problem with him.
Yeah, you're not gonna write yourself off, especially Teddy at this point of his career. So, Tua is given every opportunity here. I expect him to take the most of it. It's definitely possible that he, you know, doesn't. But what this trade also does, and I tweeted this out earlier, for the Dolphins, now they don't have a first or second round pick. That is huge for Chase Edmonds. Tremendous. That is two picks, early picks, that they cannot use on top-tier talent. That pretty much takes Breece Hall off of the board for the Dolphins. That probably takes Kenneth Walker off the board for the Dolphins. Probably takes Isaiah Spiller off the board for the Dolphins. So now you're looking day three. I think there's a real world. If someone gets added, it's Brian Robinson. Reunite the Bama guys, and that's it. Like, if it's Brian Robinson and Chase Edmonds, that is a fantastic landing spot for both of them. And a fantastic landing spot for Chase Edmonds, who will immediately be one of my favorite PPR values in the draft.
Yeah, I was in on Chase Edmonds. I'm even more in on him now because you can't load the box against the Dolphins anymore. It's impossible. They're the fastest team in the NFL. So I'm super excited for almost every skill player on that team.
Yeah.
Except for Remo, because he'll get hurt.
Yeah. Let's touch on a final Dolphin. How about Mike Gesicki? You know, franchise tag tight end. This is a tough one for Mike Gesicki because Mike Gesicki, he's a guy that can rely. He makes the most of his catches because of how athletic he is. He doesn't catch too many, and he's not consistent. That's the problem. And he's also a guy that lines out in the slot. He lines up out wide. He doesn't line in line because he can't block. How will that impact him? Well, the Dolphins now have three receivers that should be on the field. Four receivers as well because they signed Cedric Wilson for a decent amount of money. They have four receivers that they want on the field. Now they are paying Mike Gesicki good money to be their starting tight end, to be a receiver. How do you see Mike Gesicki still fitting in this offense?
I think his upside obviously takes a hit. It's maybe only a little bit less than it was before, but the opposite on Chase Edmonds is that this move makes me less high on Mike Gesicki, even though I wasn't high on him to begin with, because of what you just said. Is when he was on the Dolphins last year, he commanded such a small amount of the target share. And now you add Tyreek Hill to that, you add Cedric Wilson, a free agent who, you know, they paid a decent amount of money to. I think he's one rung lower on the ladder now as a guy who was already super volatile before. I'm not going to be drafting him in any way, probably.
It's interesting because Mike Gesicki saw – it's more than you think. Like, I take it back to some extent. Mike Gesicki saw – do you want to guess how many targets he saw?
In total, across the whole season?
Total. Across – yeah, the whole season, which was 17 games. He played every single
17
one.
17 games.
He was the tight end nine in PPR.
He had a couple, like, goose eggs, like total disappearances.
He always does, yeah. He had a seven-target game with zero receptions. And three-reception game with – or three-target game.
I'll go modest and say he had six – probably more than 65. I'll say 70 targets.
70 targets? He had 112.
Yeah. Wow.
He had 112 targets. So the target share, honestly, it was there. He only caught 73 of those 112, which is not great for a tight end at all. But the real problem was that he only scored two touchdowns. That's a number that will go up. Two touchdowns will not repeat. That will be a much higher number, more closer to what he had in 2020 when he had six. So that target share is going to dip. It'll be probably closer to 90, give or take, maybe 85, 90. I think you can expect with Mike Gesicki a stat line similar to his, honestly, his 2020 line when he was the tight end seven for PPR. An 85 target season for 53 yards or 53 receptions, 703 yards, and six touchdowns. I think that's a very realistic outcome. It's not going to be a huge breakout, but he could be a nice little steal depending on how low he goes in drafts. I think tight end seven, tight end six is about where he's going to fall. But you know what you're getting, Mike Gesicki. You're getting zero, you're getting 12, you're getting 16, you're getting two. That's not going to change with him. That's kind of the player he is. And unless you get 10 touchdowns out of him, which is a very little chance.
Can we talk about rookies? Yeah. This is the most exciting day.
Rookies? Well, I mean, I suppose we could, yeah. Do you want to? I want to quickly run through 1 minute's worth of the Chiefs side. So this obviously leaves Juju as the big beneficiary, Travis Kelce, mega targets. I don't know about you. I don't think we need to spend too much time on this. Patrick Mahomes is not my Dynasty QB1 anymore.
He wasn't to begin with. I was taking Josh Allen over him to begin with just because of the rushing upside that he has. It's interesting what we're going to do with Patrick Mahomes. I mean, depending on what they do with free agency, because they have a ton of draft picks and, you know, getting rid of Tyreek Hill, now they have a little more cap space than they did before. Probably not enough to sign a free agent worth much, especially at this point of the window.
There's not much left. MVS is the most likely name.
Yeah. And MVS wouldn't even be terrible for him. I think you hate on MVS a little too much. You're an avid MVS hater. But at the end of the day, I mean, he's still Patrick Mahomes, and I'll give him every ounce of respect that he deserves. But if I ever was going to draft Patrick Mahomes, let's say in a 1QB dynasty startup in, you know, the back of the second, top of the third, which is about where he goes, I'm waiting until the back of the third if that's my draft strategy. Which it isn't. That's not my personal preference, but that's where I'd be taking him now.
I still have Mahomes ahead of Josh Allen. I have firmly moved Josh Allen ahead now. Patrick Mahomes is this is tough, where it's not going to impact him too much because he is an incredible talent, and he's more mobile than you think. You know, he has over 60 carries in each of his last two seasons. It's something that I'm worried about, and I think he can offset it with more rushing ability. But Patrick Mahomes has thrown for over 35 touchdowns each of the last two seasons. He's thrown for 37 at least in all but 1 year, and not including his rookie year, we only played one game. He still has Andy Reid, but this is a huge loss. Juju cannot replicate what Tyreek Hill does. They're completely different players. This is where you're asking Mecole Hardman and a most likely a day one player, a day one rookie wide receiver, to step in. And that rookie receiver, we're going to get into those guys later. Mm-hmm. So let's, I don't want to skip too much time on that.
Last thing I'll say about the Chiefs side while you get ready for that is Tyreek Hill is a receiver that Patrick Mahomes has had almost his entire career ever since he started. Yep. That is huge that he's lost a top tier S tier wide receiver that he's had a long time. He's won rings with, he's been to the AFC Championship every single year. He's been a starter with Tyreek Hill, and now he's gone. That is got to be a massive morale hit for him.
Patrick Mahomes has not dealt with this. He hasn't had people leave on him. He's had Travis Kelce the entire way. Like, Tyreek Hill has not been really hurt all too much. Travis Kelce is the epitome of health, knock on wood. So it's going to be very interesting to see how Patrick Mahomes handles this type of adversity. And I wish him luck. It's a tough division. Real quick, let's do a 5 second thing right now. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Who's winning the AFC West?
Chargers.
Chargers? Okay. Yep. I am going to say the Broncos get it done on the back of that defense and Russell Wilson being good enough.
As I can't pick a first-year head coach to win a division that is so stacked as the AFC West. I can't do it. I won't. And Brandon Staley proved enough that he deserves a head coach in this position, and they are, in my opinion, the most talented team on paper. So I'll take them to win a division. All right, let's move on because I've talked too much, and I could talk too much.
And what are we going to move on to? We'll move on to the pro days, which have taken off since the combine ended last week or 2 weeks ago now. Time flies. But pro days took off, and obviously Malik Willis was the talk of the town with his arm. And you know what the best thing about pro days is that the top wide receivers don't do them. I'm sorry. If you are shocked by Malik Willis's arm, if you are blown away by the strength.
Where were you?
We've been talking about this. People have been talking about this for the longest time. People know Malik Willis has a good arm. If you've been paying attention, all this is mainstream, picking up things that you didn't get anyway. Malik Willis has been the QB1 of this class for the better part of 3 months. He's always been for me, and totally fell off since Kenny Pickett measured in with his baby hands, it hasn't even been close. Hasn't been competition. And when it comes to super flex leagues, Malik Willis is your QB1, your 101 of the draft, thanks to his rushing volume and his big arm. And with all this big push up in his draft stock, it's going to get him better draft capital. And he's the only QB of this class. I am 1000% confident they're a day one pick. I would not be shocked if Kenny Pickett slipped to day 2. I don't think he will. I think it'll be day one, but I think there is a world where that happens. There's no world Malik Willis is not a top 15 pick.
Malik Willis has done so many great things for his draft stock in the last.
Oh my God.
There's plenty of talk about him going number 2 overall to the Lions.
Yeah. I saw that, which is madness.
Over the last few days.
It's madness because listen, this is still the same flawed QB class. Throwing a lovely deep ball, great deep ball with a great arm while being mobile. That's great. But it's all the same traits that we've already talked about. So, yes, Malik Willis had a fantastic pro day. You shouldn't be changing anything because of it. He's the exact same player he was on tape. He's the exact same player he is in the analytics department. All this did was confirm what we already know, but we kind of had that already at the combine. It's good stuff for his draft stock. It'll help his draft capital, which is always beneficial, but don't blow it out of proportion. And that goes for all these pro days as well.
Yes, sir.
So
too true.
Another pro day I wanted to bring up was Justin Ross at Clemson, especially since Justin Ross did not get to run or do anything at the combine because of his injury. And Justin Ross is an interesting guy, wide receiver out of Clemson, big guy, was amazing as a true freshman, over 1,000 yards, broke out with Trevor Lawrence. Second year was a solid year, a little bit of a step back, but it was still a solid year with Trevor Lawrence as they went up to the national championship. He lit up Alabama in the national championship for over 150 something yards and a couple touchdowns. That's what you want to see on the biggest stage. You want to see someone light up Alabama. And then he suffered a brutal spinal injury that people were worried we were never going to see him again in 2020. And then he came back in 2021, played some games, but was playing through an injury in his foot. Finally got a tree in November, declared for the draft. Now looking at a day 3 selection. Ran around a 4.5, 4.6 range in the 40. It was everything we expected from Justin Ross. But I kind of, since we did wide receivers last week, and since that's the theme right now, I want you to give me like a 1 minute feel on what you think about Justin Ross, because I think he's one of, if not the most interesting wide receiver prospects in this class.
He's been a pretty hot riser as well lately, and I've kind of bought into it. You know, it's for the reasons you said, is that he's been marred with injury, man. It's easier for me than it is for a lot of other people to look around injuries. And I feel like I say to myself, I should be putting more stock in injuries like that, but it's hard for me to forget how good players are when they're healthy. And that's not how NFL evaluators look at it. Players fall in the draft because of injury concerns all the time. But this feels like a guy that, you know, is a classic fall in the draft and injuries. He ends up, you know, a fourth round pick. I wouldn't be surprised if he was, I kind of would be. Yeah, he's probably going to be a day 3 pick. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's a total value.
Yeah. It's he's an interesting guy. Breaking out at the age that he broke out was really impressive. And again, you could give some of that to the Trevor Lawrence, you know, all-time generational prospect. But Justin Ross is someone I really want to see. I don't think there's a world he gets. I don't think he gets day two capital. But if he gets a fourth round pick, goes to the right spot, hell, goes to the Jags. You know, I that would be fantastic for him. I think DJU really held him back last year. You saw a lot of the times they were not on the same page. Where you see Justin Ross, he's got some nuance for a big guy running his routes, where he's better than you think, and he cuts to the open space when he runs those routes. And DJU throws it in the other way. There were a lot of option routes where they just were not on the same page. So I'm really looking forward to see where he gets drafted. And a final thing I'll touch on with the pro days. Two things, really. One is quick. People are terrible for not treating David Ojabo's injury as bad as it was.
Yeah.
As you saw in the video, he went down. He tore his Achilles, which is unbelievably terrible. Prayers to his recovery, and hopefully he still gets the draft capital he still deserves. Michigan linebacker towards Achilles at his pro day, top 10 pick, no longer, so probably falling down to the late day two, second, third round. I think he'd still be a second round pick, but Achilles injuries are brutal.
Mm-hmm.
And Raleigh, do you want to describe the video real quick? We're going to keep this on the shorter side, but I just want to bring it up.
I forget what drill he was running. It was some shorter shuttle drill, and you know he planted his foot the wrong way. Achilles injury goes down, and there are scouts and scouts around him who, you know, next guy, you know, he's on the ground like writhing. He's, you know,
and nobody came over.
Yeah,
nobody came over. It's a terrible thing. It's another reminder, as if we don't have enough reminders in the NFL nowadays, that this is a business and people are not being viewed as human. But again, I want to bring it up partially because of that, because people should hear about him, and partially because his draft capital will be slipping as a result. He will be going much later in the IDP leagues. Might be a value, but that is, an Achilles injury is really tough. We saw how devastating that was to guys like Jalen Smith in their pre-draft process. So hoping for the speedy and quick recovery. That's redundant, but still. And the final name I wanted to touch on was Quay Walker out of Georgia, the linebacker. N'Kobe Dean stepped out because he was dealing some foot injuries. That's harmful for his draft stock as someone who is a day one potential type of guy. But Quay Walker really stepped up, a four-star recruit. He is a name to be watching for as a sleeper, not quite a sleeper, because he will get good draft capital, but running a 4.52 at 6'4", 241, that's what you want to see from your linebackers. You want to see them be athletic. You want to see them be able to get to that quarterback, get to that rusher on the edge. And he's someone I want to keep an eye out for later in IDP drafts, seeing where he ends up in the drafts, because he's got some real potential, and I do like those Georgia defensive players. So, now with that settled, it is rookie time. Well, this is all rookies, and I'll give a 20-second thing that Kenny Pickett met with the Carolina entire coaching staff. Carolina's doing their due diligence in the rookie process, but Kenny Pickett did meet with their offensive coordinator, the QB coach, their owner, and head coach. That, when you see those four names, that's something to keep an eye out for. I'm saying it now, so people have it on the radar, because that should not be ruled out of the equation at all, given how poor the Carolina's QB situation is. Shout out to DJ Moore getting his contract before they ruin him. Now we can get to the wide receivers, the meat of the show, as everyone would call it. So, do you have any honorable mentions you want to start us with? Oh, no, there's no honorable mentions. We just did 10 through 6 last week. Check that out.
Top five.
Check that show. Wide receiver 5, Jameson Williams out of Alabama. Take us away, Raleigh.
So this is a guy, as a Patriots fan, I've been a little bit more interested as of late. He's projected to go in the 21-ish range that the pick that the Patriots have. And he was one of the first receivers I watched of this class. And one of my, you know, I wasn't in love with the way he played on tape. Obviously, huge playability, super fast, like unbelievable, you know, blow the top off the defense. I had some problems with his contact balance and his ability after the catch. That was, you know, kind of my biggest thing, which is majority of the reason I have him down here this low. You know, the injury also makes me a little bit more skeptical, which, you know, I said before that that doesn't matter to me as much. It matters a lot more when you're in this top tier because, you know, it's a separator between guys like Jameson Williams and guys who will be above him that we're going to talk about a little later. But there were a couple, just a few question marks with Jameson Williams. He's, you know, he's a little smaller. One of the bigger question marks is the fact that he was with Ohio State in the early years of his career, did nothing, absolutely nothing, transferred to Alabama from Ohio State, did absolutely nothing in his first year with Alabama, and then broke out in his final year. So, you know, I don't put as much stock into that as other people do. If you're successful, you're successful, in my opinion. You like to say a lot that, you know, guys should be asserting themselves onto the field, which I agree with, but, you know, I will evaluate based on what I see on tape. And Jameson Williams was just incredible. He was a good route runner. His hands were decent. You know, I've stopped putting a bunch of stock into drops. They're just such a market for guys who are fast. It's insane. Like I think he's gonna go higher than we think just because that's how it works. And which I hope isn't the case as a Patriots fan. And I'm you know, kind of been backing taking him with that 21st overall pick. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets drafted way before that. Just it happens every year. That's why Henry Ruggs was the first wide receiver off the board in a class with CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy, you know?
It does also help that he is a good returner. He's a good special teamer. Mm-hmm. That is a very small thing that it's a smaller thing for these day one guys, but it does help quite a lot to know that he will contribute somewhere on the field. Like if you need to work him in as a receiver, you can at least play him as special teams. And the one thing that is the reason why Jameson Williams is not being talked about in a higher light is A, the Ohio State thing, like you said, where he did not produce, he could not beat out those top tier Ohio State guys, transferred to Alabama and immediately established himself, which I do really like that, which is my knock against Mechie, as I mentioned last week, where Mechie was the guy. And then boom, Jameson Williams steps in. You are nobody. You're nothing. All right. Bryce Young said, I'm not playing with you anymore. Done. Kicks him out. I'm done with you, John. It's Jameson Williams time. And that speed, like you said, that is reliable draft capital. People are already talking about Jameson Williams as the Tyreek Hill replacement, as if they already forgot what Mecole Hardman was. But
yep. It's
neither here nor there. Jameson Williams is a very, very good prospect. The guy that I started this off by saying the one thing was the Ohio State thing and the whole establishing. The other one is the ACL injury, where he tore his ACL late in the year. What, December?
December. Yep.
He tore his ACL in December. That's why we haven't heard anything from his combine, because he didn't do anything at the combine. And I'm not
expecting his pro day in a week.
His pro day is in a week. I don't anticipate him doing anything. I wouldn't be surprised if he somehow found himself out there, but I think it only hurt his draft.
ACL injury.
Draft stock's on the rise right now purely by passive. People are forgetting about the concerns,
yep. And
people are getting excited. So I don't anticipate him doing anything at Alabama's pro day in a week, but he's a good prospect for everything you just said. I think he's a good route runner. He's got great speed. His vision and like he's good after the catch. Like I know you said it was a struggle. He's good after the catch, but he is good because of his speed.
Yes.
It's not necessarily because he's not making people miss a ton, and he's not running. He's obviously not going to run through people. The speed can get it done. We've seen it work where that happens, as long as they're with the offensive coordinators, they can get him in space. Like, and his route running can create that space for him. All he has to do is get a little bit more wiggle, and I think that's totally possible. I think that's almost likely for a guy like Jameson Williams when he gets that draft capital. He's someone I'm very excited about. I really want to see him get that. I want to confirm that draft capital, and I want to get those injury concerns to the side. Because I do worry about that if it starts lingering into camp. Slow starts for rookies are never fun. Either way, he's our wide receiver 5. He's my wide receiver 4 because I have him ahead of this next name, a wide receiver whose pro day was today. Out of USC, Drake London, my wide receiver 5, your wide receiver 4. We consensus had him at wide receiver 4. Yes, whatever. Drake London, big body, big lanky guy.
Big guy.
He is a good player, a young player at 20 years old. We will be 21 come drafts, come week one, which is incredibly young. And he is 6'5", 210. That is sorry. He weighed in at
his combine measurement. That was his combine.
Thank you. So weighed in a little bit heavier, which is what you wanted to see, and he came in a little bit shorter, which it's a matter of a couple centimeters. Like it's really not all that much of a difference between 6'5" and 6'4". And the people worried about 6'5" for him, given the lack of track record for those guys, but Drake London is a interesting guy. I am not the biggest fan of him, personally. That's why I say that having him at wide receiver 5, but I worry about his ability to break tackles, his explosiveness. He didn't run great routes. He doesn't have much of a route tree. He's going up or he's going out. That's about it. He's not working the middle of the field much. He's not going to be very versatile. He's doing what he's doing. And he made some amazing contested catches. That's what you want to see. And he bulked up a little bit to help with that. But I really did not see the explosiveness that I want to see from a guy that is as skinny as he can be. I want to see more muscle on him. It's as plain as that, honestly.
I am going to disagree with a lot of that. I think what's happening is you're scarred by Bryan Edwards.
I'm not wrong on Bryan Edwards. Bryan Edwards is a 30-year breakout this year.
You're scarred. And here's why that's a bad thing, let me tell you. Is, you know, they're similar players. Bryan Edwards was the big guy. He's gonna mosh you and he's gonna get all these contested catches on you. That was his track record in college, which
Bryan Edwards was a better player after the catch than Drake London.
And that's beside the point. So I think you're scared of putting stock like that in the kind of player, and I disagree. And I think Drake London showed absolutely everything he needed to in order to fit that bill. And it's become a little bit more of a conversation lately that we should temper our expectations for kinds of guys like this, because it doesn't always translate, with N'Keal Harry being the poster boy for that. And I think that Drake London was absolutely perfect in that area. He had great positioning on every single play. I think he had a decent amount of strength. The biggest concerns with him is his route running and his route tree. I think that's, you know, one of the bigger things I look for when I'm scouting wide receivers. And obviously that's, you know, my expectations for Drake London are different than they are for guys like Jameson Williams or guys ahead of him, ahead of London on this list. But I'm in on Drake London. I'm in on taking him as in the top half of the first round. I think he can be a total difference maker, and I don't think he needs any particular scheme to fit in. I think he can succeed with any sort of quarterback. He would do better with a long ball thrower because that's where he excelled the most. He was incredibly efficient when he was in college, especially with downfield targets. So, you know, I think there's a case to be made for Drake London to be ahead of this next guy that we're going to talk about on my personal rankings. I haven't quite gotten there yet because Drake London hasn't done any workouts. He suffered a broken ankle in college, and he's holding his own pro day in a couple weeks. The USC official pro day was today. He did not participate. He's going to do his own workouts on the side in a couple weeks. So we'll wait and see what happens with him there. Until that is to be seen, I'll take the guy who ahead of him, who, spoiler, had a pretty good combine workout. But I think he's that guy.
If he is that guy in a USC offense that had Keaton Slovis, a potential first round pick next year, his dominator is too low for what I want it to be. It should be higher than 22% in the 28th percentile.
I think you're putting a little too much stock in dominator. He was insane in his final year, and I don't remember how many games he played. I think it was like 8-ish, but he was putting up 150 yards a game. He was dominant. I can't imagine like that. His dominator is probably skewed by earlier years of his career. Let me look at his stats here.
He was an early breakout. You remember Drake London? That's the pro for him. We talk about Justin Ross being one of the early breakouts, amazing true freshman. Drake London broke out at 18 years old flat, which is 99th percentile. It's unheard of.
Insane.
But I want to see Drake London just be a little bit more of a present. Like, it's just 88 receptions. I thought he would average more than 12 yards per catch, given the guy that he is.
Like, Drake London had a 24.8% target share in eight games. So in eight games, he had 1,084 receiving yards, 1,000-yard receiver in eight games with seven touchdowns. I got my calculator in my hand, 1,084 divided by eight. That's an average of 135 yards per game. I think it just took him a little bit while longer to get there. Only a 10% target share when he was a freshman in 2019. And he was 18 years old. I mean, I think it's a little bit too much to expect him to put up an insane dominator, because the 34.9% dominator, 68th percentile, that's of his entire college career. And I think he showed more than enough. A 24.8% target share as a 20-year-old receiver at USC, especially with Keaton Slovis at quarterback. And he was insane. 135 yards per game and almost averaged a touchdown every game.
I'm not going to say he's a good prospect. I'm saying that there are red flags that I don't think people are addressing with him, where his yards per team pass attempt, for example, the lowest of any of these names that we're talking about today, with the exception of the person that we're going to bring up next. So the second lowest of these top five guys, and among the lowest of our top 10 consensus. It's not I'm saying there are red flags with him that I wanted to see more of. I want to see him be a cleaner route runner, given how nimble that he looks to be. I don't know if he's winning those contested balls on the next level. I don't know if he's running by those guys on the next level. Keaton Slovis in that USC offense has been churning out good receivers and good passing games for a while. I'm saying that I'm a little bit worried about how he's going to – I think he's a guy he reminds me a lot of DJ Chark. That's the type of career arc I see for him. And that's not bad. Greg Chark was a wide receiver too.
I don't know why. Isn't that weird?
I mean, I see a lot of people comping him to a Terrace Marshall, even. Ugh. But I don't see that at all, really. But I think DJ Chark is kind of the career arc I see for him. And DJ Chark was fantasy relevant for a good year and in terrible conditions. So it's definitely possible for Drake London. He could totally prove me wrong, and I'm not saying he's a bad prospect or player, but I have him at wide receiver five. It's still a top five guy, and I like a few guys beyond that too. But I do have my wide receiver five. I have Jameson Williams ahead of him, and we both have this next name ahead of him, out of Ohio State, Chris Olave. Now,
you start with Chris Olave because I think you have some pretty interesting things to say about this dude.
I do. For a while, I had him ahead of Garrett Wilson. I decided to switch that, and we both had him at wide receiver. We both have him at wide receiver three, correct?
Correct.
Yes, we both have him at wide receiver three. Now, the biggest knock people give against him, or one of the larger knocks, is that he came back for his senior year. He did not leave last year, and then he came back this year and just wasn't as dominated as he was the year before. Except he kind of was. No, he didn't go over 1,000 yards, but he scored 13 touchdowns. He was above 30% of the dominator, which I've mentioned before. That's what I want to see. I don't want to see 22%. I want to see 31.9, despite splitting reps with Garrett Wilson, where, you know, Drake London
and Jackson Smith is going to be insane, who was totally bonkers this year.
It is a very competitive room, but Chris Olave still demanded what was his. He still saw 103 targets, and he wins all across the field. Like, he can work down low. He can work downfield. He's a well-rounded player where his route running and his speed and his size work so well together. And maybe you want to see him bulk up a little bit if you want to see him win contested balls a little bit more. But his hands are among the best in the class. I'm so excited for Chris Olave because I feel he gets ridiculously disrespected. Like, yeah, his yards were down because he didn't cross 1,000 yards. Also went from Justin Fields to a very good, but not Justin Fields, C.J. Stroud. There's naturally going to be a decline when you're also
struggled at the beginning of the year. C.J. Stroud struggled at the beginning of the year. He came on much stronger at the end of the year.
Yes, and that also – He got better as it went on. He's a good player, and
the disappointed nose exhale of how people are treating.
It's frustrating that people are acting like, yeah, you know, he's not in the top three, and like he also broke out at 19 years old. That's an 85th percentile breakout. He's a very good player that can do everything you want on the field. I might want to see him do a little bit more after the catch, but that's the knock. I have yards after the catch, and I have late declare as the knocks. I'm not caring about late declares. There are a lot of people who have bucked that trend in recent years. I'm starting to put that down a little bit. That doesn't worry me as much, but it is something that you do have to factor in.
I think the main reason I'm with you on that is if he had come out of that class, he still would have been among the top tier wide receivers. Yes. and we've talked about this, like Ja'Marr Chase, Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, and we're probably putting Chris Olave right behind him. Maybe you can make the case for Rashad Bateman. I personally wouldn't do it, but he still would have been either a first round pick or a second round pick. Maybe he just stayed in this class because he knew if he had stayed in, he would have been a guaranteed bona fide first round pick this year, which he is. And maybe he just had unfinished business at Ohio State. Maybe he wanted to play with CJ Stroud for some reason. I don't know. I'm not going to pretend to know why he stayed. All I know is that if he had come out as a junior, he still would have been great. And he's just as great as he was a year ago.
Yeah, nothing's changed with that. And on the topic of late declares as well, a guy like Deebo Samuel. Deebo Samuel was a four-year prospect. He stayed in college all 4 years. So it's not – there is some logic behind coming out earlier. You want to see that, but there are plenty of players who have bucked that trend, and I'm not overly worried about it. And I expect him to be a day one pick. I really do. I think that's somewhat in the air for some people where he's round two. Late round one. I think he's going to be a round one pick. I think there's a world he's the first receiver off the board. I wouldn't expect it, but when he ran a good 40 time, he's big. He's a name that people have been drooling over for a while. It's not out of the realm of possibilities. That's all I'm saying. And I think Chris Olave is going to be a fantastic pick who's going to be on a lot of my dynasty rosters this offseason.
I'm in on Chris Olave, and I tried not to say his name just so I can, you know, boil up some theatrics here, but I think Chris Olave and Drake London are kind of a toss-up for me right now. I'll take Chris Olave. I've already said it. I'll take Chris Olave just because he worked out, and we know his 40 time, and we know his, you know, shuttle time and all that sort of stuff. But it's a toss-up to me. They're both great. Both are going to be first-round picks. I'd be shocked to see either one fall out.
That Jameson Williams guy we just talked about, he transferred because he couldn't beat out this guy. So,
true.
Yeah. Let's move on to our wide receiver two. He's my wide receiver one, but by consensus, we put him at two. Both, this is a bit of a tier, I think, for us, in terms of at least in the consensus of the community, and it's close to a tier for me. I Chris Olave ridiculously high, but these top two guys are a tier. We're going to start with number one of these, Treylon Burks, who I forgot to put his college, but
it's Arkansas.
Treylon Burks, Arkansas, thank you. I blanked. It's been a long day, but all I know is that Treylon Burks is my wide receiver one, and he's a big boy. He is a big boy, standing at 6'3", 232. Actually, I don't have a combine updated measurement, but
6'2", 225. So slightly
6'2", 225. That's yes. Now, what I really like about Treylon Burks is that he is a bully. He is a bully. He is somebody that will break tackles. He will win after the catch. He will get up and get that ball. He is such a good athlete, and people are knocking him for a slightly slower 40 time in that 4.5 range. When you factor in 6'2", 225, that's great. That's good. That's what you want to see. That's what you want. He's such a good weapon where you can give him the ball in a screen just as much as you can give him the ball 40 yards downfield. I am so. Like, Treylon Burks is my wide receiver one because his ceiling is by far the highest in this class. Anybody knocking for athleticism, you don't know what you're talking about, because this is a guy with almost a 46% dominator in the 92nd percentile. He's someone who demanded a 31% target share, who broke out at 20, which is fine. With 20 and a half, it's middle of the pack, but that's not a knock at all. He has the highest yards per team pass attempt of anyone in this class, any of these top five guys by a yard or half a yard. There's nothing he cannot do, and that's what I want to see. That's what I want in a guy. His route tree might not be stellar, but when you have the other traits that he has, that doesn't matter. We see year after year, as much of a route tree guy that I am, we see guys succeed in spite of it when you have these physical gifts that I think Drake London does not have. And that's the difference here. Of, I'm worried about route tree because I don't know if Drake London has the athleticism to match that. I know Treylon Burks can do that. And you could totally grow into a route tree too.
Yep. And Treylon Burks is kind of just a leveled up Drake London, and he can do the same things. He's a little bit shorter, but we've said it every single show is I don't like player comps, but he is built like Deebo Samuel. He plays like Deebo Samuel. He can be used in any way, just like Deebo Samuel. And it's really incredible. Like I'm excited to see Treylon Burks play in the NFL just purely because of that, is because he could be used in so many different ways, depending on the scheme he ends up in, that can be unlocked. And he has so many elite traits. He has the best spectacular catch ability in this class. He's made diving catches. He's made the, you know, insane mosses and the contested catches. Like his tape is by far, of any of these receivers, the most fun to watch.
He was the only person, and again, our wide receiver one by consensus is also really exciting to watch, but he is the only person that screams alpha off the screen to me. And the next guy is very close to it. Obviously, he's ahead, but in between the size and the versatility, and if he gets the right coach, he's going to see carries, and that's going to be so exciting to watch too. There's really not much he can do. He can't do. Is there any knock that you have against him that you want to bring up, or have we kind of touched on it?
All we have written down here is the route tree, which you mentioned. He's slightly older than his peers. He's 22 now. That doesn't bother me, especially with wide receivers. His change of direction isn't elite as you would expect to see in a top two receiver, but that's a little bit more outside his game. Like he's not going to be in that situation very often. So he's going to be so good.
Yep. And I think he's a lock for a day one pick, which also helps as well. And I don't think he falls past the Cowboys in the first round, and I expect him to go even well before that. So he'll be a fantastic fit in Dallas. But that's neither here nor there. We could talk about that at another point. Especially when the draft comes around, we'll have a lot more content as well. But our wide receiver one, the counterpart to Chris Olave, the Batman to his Robin. Actually, no, disrespectful. The Robin to Chris Olave's Batman.
Stop it, stop it, stop
Garrett
it.
Wilson.
Garrett Wilson.
Oh, my God. Garrett Wilson out of Ohio State. I really like Garrett Wilson. He's my wide receiver two. He is Riley's wide receiver one, so I'll let you take it away for our final prospect of the night.
So I'll make it quick. We've been on for a while, but Garrett Wilson is the best wide receiver in this class in terms of upside combined with completion as a wide receiver. I think he's the most complete wide receiver in this class. His route running is outstanding. He's fast. He ran in the high 4.3s, just about the same time as Chris Olave. He's got the big play ability. He's athletic. And it's such a good separator, and it's insane everything he can do. The only negatives we have written down for him are that drops are an issue, which I already mentioned, is, you know, that is one of the more coachable things, and if not the most coachable thing in a wide receiver. And sometimes his release package off the line of scrimmage is a little bit muddy, but that's another very coachable thing, something that wide receivers have come to focus on a lot. And Davante Adams kind of headed that process of new releases and trickery off the line. I think both of those things can be coached into him. I think he's just so well-rounded, and you can do so many things with him. Same thing with Chris Olave. I mean, they're pretty similar players, similar size, similar speed, similar, you know, college production. I think Garrett Wilson is just much better after the catch. He's better at making guys miss. He'll run through you a couple times. He weighed in at, let me double check my measurements, 6'1", 83. So he's not huge, but he showed that ability to run through some guys. And He'll make you miss in a phone booth, which Chris Olave can't do. So I'm so excited for Garrett Wilson. I think he's not only the safest, I think he's the safest pick of all of these guys, and I think he has the second most upside. And that blend makes him a beautiful dynasty asset.
Yeah. Ran a 4.3 at 40. You like to see that. He has a 64th percentile speed score as well as a 58th percentile burst. It's solid, not amazing, but he's like you said, the common thread that we've said about these top three guys, it's well-rounded and versatile. And that's what you have to be in today's NFL, where Garrett Wilson can line up in the slot and dominate just as much as he can line up out wide and dominate. I think he'll start in the slot with that kind of smaller frame, but he will work his way out wide in the sense that I think Elijah Moore type of trajectory of Elijah
Moore began to work outside. He has the route running ability to work inside, and that's
yes.
It's so useful for head coaches to have that versatility. So useful.
It is. And he hits that 30% dominator I want to see. He hits the target share. He demanded that 28% target share, which is super strong. And then again, when you compare that to a guy like Drake London, where it was a little bit lower, I'm not going to keep on burying Drake London with these comps, but I think that's where the tier is, and that's why I keep bringing it up. But Garrett Wilson is a lock for day one. He is going to be a top five rookie pick. It's well worth a top five rookie pick. And I think I am really excited. And these landing spots are going to be really telling between him and Treylon Burks and someone who will jump in. Of these top five, let's start wrapping up. Of these top five, which of them – what's it called? Sorry. Of these back end of the top five, let's say of Olave, London, and Jameson Williams, which one of them is the most likely to be drafted higher than you expected?
Probably Jameson Williams. Like we already said, you know, he's got that incredible speed. Obviously, he didn't run any workouts at the combine because of his ACL injury, but that is such a hot commodity in the NFL right now, and we haven't seen any signs of that stopping. And I think Drake London could also get drafted higher than we think, and, you know, the injuries affect that as well. But Jameson Williams has the biggest likelihood to sneak into a sneaky little like top 12 pick.
Yeah, I tend to agree. It's speed that does it. I think there's a world where Chris Olave is drafted much higher than people think. But if I had to put a dark horse, it would probably be Jameson Williams, who is slowly climbing up boards. But not slowly, but very quietly climbing up boards right now. Yeah, it feels like the Twitter rumblings are coming. And come draft day, it's going to be a bit of a roar. We'll see if that roar equates to top 10 draft pick, top 20 draft pick, top 30 even, or if he's a day one pick at all. But that has been our show. Let's run through our top five rookie wide receivers. One wide receiver five is Jameson Williams out of Alabama. Wide receiver four, Drake London out of USC. Number three was Chris Olave out of the Ohio State. Wide receiver two was Treylon Burks out of Arkansas. And Garrett Wilson topped the list out of Ohio State. Next week, we're going to break down the rookie QBs. We're going to do our top five rookie quarterbacks, because once you go beyond that, it comes down to draft capital if you even want to be thinking about them. But that's going to be a great show. That's all that matters, really. So we'll be back next week, Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern and 6 p.m. Central. Want to give a quick shout out to the IDP guys and For Frequency's Sake for helping us put this all together. This has been From College to Combine. I am Michael Scully. You can follow me at Michael__Scully on Twitter. I've heard it's a great follow, but what do I know? And Riley, where can they find you?
At Riley1_Millett on Twitter. Just the one.
Yeah, you just spell out one underscore. And it's really great. It's a terrible line, honestly. It's pretty clumsy. But what do I know about that? All I know is that we're going to have a great show next week, and we will see you then. Have a good night. Bye.